Still following.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. I hope everyone is doing well. We are here for it's Thursday night, so it means another opportunity to discuss biblical people, places, and things. Learning in the shul this week, graciously sponsored by the Wolk family in memory of Mrs. Wolk, Allah Shalom. And tonight's cheer is also being dedicated as a close for Fuish Lehman, for one of our big time participants. We just want you to know we're with you 100%. Right. So just to let you know, and I hope that you'll be back in your feet and back with us again soon. I want to talk tonight about a concept that's a little bit out of the box for biblical people, places, and things. The thing I want to talk about plays such a prominent role in the Parsha, and it plays such a prominent role in Pesach. Oh, there's my friend Lee. It's good to see you. Give me a wave just to let me know you can hear me. Right. There we go. Good to see you. Hope you're doing well. It plays such a central role in our parsha that it's so important, and yet the concept seems to come up in other places as well. And for tonight, I want to discuss it. It's called midnight. Now, the midnight hour plays a big time role in our parsha. And what is the place? So let's start at the beginning. The Torah in this week's parsha tells us that it was at the midpoint, at midnight, halfway through the night. God came along and he smote all the firstborn of Egypt. From the son of Pharaoh, who was sitting on his throne. To the firstborn of the captive, who's inside prison. That every firstborn child died, right? Now, when did it happen? Look at the key word. The key word that's utilized is b'chatzi halayla. It was at the halfway point of night. Of course, as some of you may recall from your study of Rashi or your study of text, that's not what Moshe said to the Jewish people. Look, it's to Pharaoh. God tells Moshe, go tell him it's going to be at midnight. Moshe Rabbeinu cheats. What does Moshe say? If you look back, source number two, which actually happened before source number one, by Yomer Moshe, Moshe declares, Ko Amar Hashem, so says God, Kach Hatzos HaLayla, here's the key word, Kach Hatzos HaLayla, or about midnight, at approximately halfway through the night, Ani Yotzei B'Sof Mitzrayim, God says, I'm going to walk throughout Egypt. Umeisko B'chor Be'eretz Mitzrayim, every firstborn is going to be is going to perish. From the oldest of Paro, the high level firstborn of Paro, who's sitting on his throne, until the firstborn of a maidservant who's behind the millstone. Even the oldest of the animals. There's going to be loud screams throughout Egypt. There was never such a loud scream in Egypt before, and there will never be such a loud scream again in the future. But you stress just now, if you like dogs, for the Jewish people, the dogs shall not bark. Neither at man or at any animal, to show that there's going to be a difference between Mitzrayim and Yisrael. And so all your servants are going to come down to Egypt and they're going to bow in front of me saying, they're going to tell me, get out of here, you and your whole nation. And then I'm going to leave Egypt. And so then Moshe Rabbeinu walked out from Paro. So when Moshe introduces the plague, he doesn't say at midnight. He says at about midnight. And, you know, I have to question Moshe on this one, because God is not supposed to do that. God's not supposed to be imprecise. And so why is he choosing to be imprecise in this situation? I'm sorry, Dina, I'll try to see. Can everyone else see beyond the first slide? If you can't see beyond the cover slide, shake your head no. Can you see this?
We only see the first slide.
That's so funny. Okay. Let me see what's going on. Thank you, Dina. Right? So the question has to be raised as to what exactly is going on over here, where Moshe Rabbeinu, can you see now? And it's it. Yes. Okay. So maybe it's something about the presentation mode. Okay. So in this situation, I have to stop and ask myself, what was Moshe Rabbeinu doing? God tells you to say something. You're supposed to be precise. And Moshe Rabbeinu chooses to be imprecise. Was God giving him permission to be imprecise? And by the way, why is Chatzos so important? What's the big deal? When did the Jews ultimately leave Egypt? That's right. The next day, right? They leave in the midday, not in midnight. So why is Chatzos so important to Yetzias Mitzrayim, to the Exodus? Why is it midnight? What's so special about midnight? In another religion, midnight mass is important. In our religion, why is the midnight so fundamental? And by the way, if you recall, we said, for the Jewish people, the dog shall not bark. What does dogs have to do with the whole storyline anyway? Why would a dog bark? What's the connection with the dogs? And finally, since my friend Devorah is sitting right there, we would be nowhere if we didn't ask what the word chatzos means. Chatzos, Devorah, comes from chatzi. What is chatzi? A half. Keep that. That's exactly right. Hold your point over there for 1 second. So I do need to tell you that if I went with your literal translation, that the word chatzos means half. There's a halfway point. You do know there's a fundamental problem with that. If you break something in half, and exactly half, then what moment in time is that? The Brisker Rav asked this question, Ravelvo Soloveitchik, right? When I break something in half, it's the space in between that makes it half, correct? Agreed? Right? So where is the halfway point in exact precise midnight? Right? It should be a time that's neither before midnight nor after midnight. And whereas in most matters, it doesn't really make that much of a difference. But Moshe Rabbeinu, he needed to be precise, right? In fact, he was scared about that. So he said, it's about midnight. What is halfway through the night? And folks, unless you think that's not a big deal, we get up and we've got four cups in us already. When we finished and we get to Nirtza at the Haggadah, we actually make a whole point and we introduce on the first night of Pesach. We say, Vayehi b'chatzi alayla. We say it was at halfway through night. And we talk about all sorts of episodes that happen halfway through night. One of them I referenced in my words before Shabbos, right? About Sancheiriv and Chizkiyahu HaMelech, King Hezekiah, and the famous episode that happened with Sancheiriv, right? So when exactly is that half? And so I'm curious to figure that out. And there's a Rashi over here that's also important that's on the screen in front of you. Rashi says, Kachatzos alayla, when Moshe Rabbeinu said approximately midnight, kehachilek halayla. It's sort of like a portion of the night. Kachatzos kemo kaalos. It was approximate, right? That's the simple understanding, right? Why do I go with something simple? Says Rashi, she'in chatzos shem dibro shachetzi. Chatzos is not just a way to refer to half. So you have to understand it has to be somewhere in a portion. It cannot be perfectly half, because if it would be perfectly half, it would be a moment that wouldn't exist. When you divide something, like we said before, halfway or halfway. Therefore, Rashi offers a different piece. And he says, Rabbi Seinu Darshu, the rabbis explained, Kamo b'chatzi alayla ve'amu shamar moche b'chatzos, d'mashma samach, it's close to the halfway point. Maybe it's a little bit before or a little bit later. But Moshe refused to say Bachatzos at exactly the precise moment. It's Tagnine power, because the magicians might make a mistake. Their watches will be off center. And then they're going to look and say, Moshe Hubadaihu. Right? They're going to say Moshe made it up, because he said at exactly the stroke of midnight, and it was not exactly the stroke of midnight. So in order to protect himself from being called a liar, Moshe Rabbeinu chooses to do what? To use the word at approximate. Why was he using the approximation? He used the approximation to prevent the magicians and the advisors of Paro from using the precision as a means of being able to do what? To declare that this great miracle and this great tragedy was not nearly as tragic as that you might think, because it proves that there's no God. So the only way to deal with that is to approximate it. So then why is that important to Chatzos? What's the big deal then? Do it at 8:30 and call it a night. Let everyone get a good night's sleep, right? And why wasn't Moshe, on the one hand, Moshe Rabbeinu chose to do this, not to fake out. But he's also a guy who's been told by God to go tell Paro that at midnight. And when Moshe chooses to change the words, isn't he falsifying the word of Hashem? What right do you have to change the words? Come on, Dvorah, you can give me that look, but let's remember, Yonah ben Amittai, he just didn't want to say anything, and he winds up in the belly of the whale, right? It's a lot worse when you say God said one thing and God said the other. It's a lot worse when you're Moshe Rabbeinu. Hear my question? Now I'm getting the nod. That's, oh, good. Thank you, Lee. Lee's giving me the thumbs up. So, you know, we see, why is Moshe, and by the way, isn't there another way that Moshe could have proved that he was right and not that others were right? Is there any way, how can one prove when exactly midnight is? Anybody? Anyone think of some means somehow? So Dvorah, I'm going to bring you way back to the beginning of the current Daf Yomi cycle, right? There is a way. Do you know what the way is? It's called a harp. Any hints with the harp?
David HaMelech's harp?
Bingo! What happened with David HaMelech's harp?
At midnight, the north wind would blow.
So the Gemara says that David Mihava Yodea Palga Delela Emas. The Gemara asks the question and says what Devorah said. Did David HaMelech not know when midnight was? Right? Moshe Rabbeinu, right? He didn't know. That's why he made the change from Kachatzos to Bachatzos. That's what the Gemara says in Brachos on Gimel Amid Beis, right in front of you, right? But David HaMelech had a solution. So my kachatzos, what does it mean, kachatzos? So the Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu, he freaked out. But how did David HaMelech know? And the Gemara says exactly what Dvorah says. David HaMelech knew because he had a harp that was right on top of his bed. And when the exact point of midnight came, the north wind came along and blew against the harp, and it made music. And so David HaMelech jumped up out of bed at midnight. He was not a heavy sleeper, I guess. And he would study Torah until the dawn, when he would begin his day, right? So if David HaMelech had a system, why couldn't Moshe Rabbeinu come up with a system to figure out exactly when midnight was? In fact, the Gemara goes one step further and says, well, you know, the Gemara says, how come David HaMelech needed the harp? So the Gemara quotes Rabbi Zeru, says that Moshe Rabbeinu did know. And David HaMelech was also able to figure out exactly when midnight was. And so if that's the case, why do you need the harp? So the Gemara says, you know why he needed the harp? Because when you're sleeping, you know what you know? Nothing. All right? So you can be the most knowledgeable person, but if you don't have an alarm clock, you can have a harp, right? So then the Gemara asks the obvious question. Wait a minute. If Moshe Rabbeinu was able to figure out when midnight was, he also could have used it. How come he had to be imprecise? Why don't you just say, I know. To which the Gemara says, you can know. That doesn't mean the Egyptians are going to agree with you. How often does that happen in our society? We know the answer to something, but because someone else is controlling the rules of the debate, they're not going to go ahead and give us the opportunity. But let's reverse the Gemara. So again, let's put ourselves into context. We have this concept called midnight. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu was imprecise about it because he was afraid of being called a liar, right? He didn't want to be called a faker or have the people run around saying there's no real God. So he said, but David HaMelech had a solution. What did he do? He used the harp, to which the Gemara says, sure, he used the harp. But he didn't need the harp. He just needed some means of getting up, right? But technically speaking, he knew exactly when midnight was. The harp was there to wake him up. And Moshe Rabbeinu also knew. But Moshe Rabbeinu didn't exactly go ahead and apply the harp. Why? So the Gemara answers, because Moshe Rabbeinu didn't go ahead and do what he did because he was afraid that the others would accuse him of being a faker. Well, we have a solution. Let's use the same trick that King David was going to use later. There'll be no debate. Why doesn't Moshe Rabbeinu just simply take a harp, put it up in a different palace, Pharaoh's palace, and wait until midnight? And when you start hearing the harp chords, right, you know it's midnight. And he's going to tell them, hey, guys, I'm going to hang this harp over here, right? And you'll see, as soon as the music starts to play, you'll all be dead, right? Think about it. Great system. No, if it worked for King David to get him to be awake, it could also be the bell that tolls for the eldest of Pharaoh. So why doesn't he go ahead and do that? And let me get another issue, right? Is there any other test that can be used to figure out midnight? So Devorah, I go back to the same page of the Gemara, and the answer is yes, and an animal lover needs to know it. What is the test? Says the Gemara, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, Shalosh, Mishmaros, Avi, Halayla. You should just know that there are three watches. The night can be divided into three watches, right? Valkol Mishmar, Mishmar, Yoshev, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'shoei Kari. On each watch, God shrieks like, roars like a lion. And by the way, at the first sign, the donkey brays. Didn't you speak about this once? In the more modern, more recently than you spoke about the animals in Eruvin, right? But didn't you see the first one, the donkey brays? At the second one, what happens? The dogs bark. So, and on the third one, babies wake up, right? And so do wives. They wake up to talk to their husbands, right? So in that situation. So what could highlight midnight? If not the harp, how about the dogs? Right?
But none of those are precise.
Okay. So then if that's the case, what's the significance of a chatzos that Moshe Rabbeinu can't prove? Right? So Tosa says, I'll tell you what it is. Moshe couldn't figure, he knew exactly when chatzos alayla was. He just didn't have a way to prove it, right? And that's what was bothering him. But I want to suggest a couple of other reasons. The first reason I want to suggest in the name of the late Satmar Rebbe, Raviol Teitelbaum. Raviol Teitelbaum, who doesn't always get quoted in our circles fairly, because he did have one position that many of us have a hard time with, but to argue that the man didn't know how to study Torah is a mistake. He knew how to study Torah, he just had one particular issue in regard to the state of Israel that I think many of us disagreed with. But when it comes to talking about the midnight hour, he stops and he looks at the Gemara in Yevamos. The Gemara suggests that in order for the harp to have worked, what wind needed to blow? Do you remember?
The north wind.
It was the north wind. Says the Gemara, for the entire 40 years that the Jews were in the desert, the north wind did not blow. And why is that? One possibility is God was doing it because he was upset with them. The other possibility is when a strong north wind blows, it can dissipate clouds, right? We don't want to see the clouds of glory that the Jews had in the desert dissipate. And so Targum Yonasan also says that he makes a similar comment. And he says, Moshe couldn't depend on the north wind because it didn't blow. And so if that's the case, then maybe in Egypt it also didn't blow. Sounds like a great suggestion, right? Maybe that is the situation. So Rashi and Yevamos comments and says, you should just know there's an association between the north wind and midnight. And why is that? Because midnight is known as an eat ratzon, right? Kiven de chatzot halayla, kiven de chatzos halayla is ratzon havoi, lemakas bechoros ha havainami is ratzon ruach tzfonis. Since chatzos halayla was a time of mercy and favor, and Jews were saved from the makas bechoros, so too. it is a ace or a tone for the north wind. In fact, the north wind only blows at midnight. And that's why David HaMelech put up the harp over there in order to be able to be there, right? And during the time that the Jews were in the desert for 40 years after the sin of the goal of the spies, they did not get the benefit of the north wind. But when did that happen? When did they lose the benefit of the north wind? In Egypt? Only when they were in the desert. And so with all deference to the Satmar Rebbe, I have to politely challenge him and say that what? On the night of Yitziat Mitzrayim, if anything, one thing should have happened. Not that there was no north wind, quite the opposite. It would make totally logical sense with deference to the Satmar Rebbe that there was a north wind. And so answer number one, Chatzos means a midnight point. And the dogs were involved because that's the time dogs normally scream. But and why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu take advantage and use the harp as a test inside Pharaoh's palace? So Satmar Rebbe says the answer is because there was supposed to be no north wind in Egypt. To which we said, why? There was no north wind. But when? When the Jews were in the desert. If anything, there was a north wind when the Jews were in Egypt, because that was the time of great mercy, and the north wind is the sign of great mercy. So let me bring you to another possibility. Possibility number two comes from the Chasam Sofer, Rabbi Moshe Schreiber. Rabbi Moshe Schreiber turns around and makes a different interpretation. He argues as follows. He says, what was the concern? The concern was that, remember, in Egypt, we were worried that the Egyptians would be standing there with their watches and say it was imprecise. What was supposed to happen? What was supposed to happen was at midnight, God had to go ahead and check, right? And he would do his thing at exactly midnight. We have to ask a question. Where is midnight? So what? That's not a correct question, Rabbi. The correct question is, when is midnight? Well, last Shabbat, my dear friend, Dr. Wenger, served as a gabbai in our shul. And Dr. Wenger, what happens on a Shabbos Mevorchin, on the Shabbos that we announce and bless the new month? At one point in time, the gabbai stops and does what?
He says when the first V'yeh is possible in Yerushalayim.
In other words, when the first time the moon will be seen where?
In Yerushalayim.
Repeat that again just for everybody else. It's in
Yerushalayim.
Now, let me ask you a question. What time is that in Hillside?
7 hours earlier.
It's 7 hours
But the moon is not appearing here at the exact moment that it's appearing over there. Is that correct or incorrect?
Correct.
Right? The new moon will appear here when it gets dark over here. Correct?
Correct.
In fact, when it could easily be argued that when the new moon is seen in Yerushalayim, in Hillside, New Jersey, it's very clearly not being seen. And yet, what do we say? We don't care. Because when we are setting a time for Rosh Chodesh, we are determining based upon when it
local
will be seen,
Jerusalem
local Jerusalem time. Now, by the way, let's say I'm not in Jerusalem. Let me pick another place. Haifa. Is the time that things that is the time the same at Haifa as it is in Yerushalayim? Well, let's use a simple barometer to measure. Is candlelighting time the exact same all over Israel? Answer? No, it is not. Correct, Devorah, right? No, it is not. Candlelighting time in different places depends on where you are in that place. It doesn't differ by a very large amount of time. The candlelighting time in Tel Aviv and Haifa is a couple of minutes difference. We're not talking about a very large period of time. Unless, of course, you're trying to be very precise. And if you look at the map of Israel and Egypt, Yeah, the time zone is more or less the same, right? If we're looking at it on the basis of hours. But if we're looking at it on the basis of seconds, right? Because remember, we want to get precisely midnight. Says the Chasam Sofer, where do we assess time from? Well, God realizes he's going to assess time from the place where time begins. Where does time begin? In Jerusalem, in Yerushalayim, right? Where and what do you get in Jerusalem and Yerushalayim? What do you find? He says, not only anywhere in Jerusalem, specifically in the place where the world began, which is the Makom HaMikdash, the Temple Mount. He says, well, when you go from the Temple Mount to the land of Egypt, to the capital city, to Cairo or Alexandria, I'm not sure which one was the capital city at that point, right? But whichever where it is, there's definitely going to be more than a second difference between sunset and sunrise. Couple of seconds at the very least, and then all of a sudden your assessment of midnight is going to be off. Moshe Rabbeinu understood this. He knew God is starts his world and ends his world around Yerushalayim. And so he said Bachatos at midnight. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, that's great, God. You're gonna say Bachatos in Yerushalayim for us mere mortals who assess time based on where we are. Right, us egocentrical mortals, we are going to be off a little bit. And so Rabbi Moshe Shriver suggests, even if it's Chatzot in Eretz Yisrael, it isn't in the land of Egypt. So say to me, well, what about King David? King David was able to wake up at precisely midnight and his harp experiment worked. Yeah, but where was King David's harp?
In Yerushalayim.
So of course, the wind blew at the exact moment. Moshe Rabbeinu would have pulled the same stunt down in Egypt. Guess what would have happened? He would have been off in terms of his time. And so Moshe Rabbeinu did not want to go with that suggestion. In fact, the Rebbe Rabbi Yohanan Eibeshitz goes one step further. Rabbi Yohanan Eibeshitz, who is a fascinating individual, he says, I want to point out that when we talk about midnight, being the moment of God's mercy, that's also not so precise. You have to understand that the moment of mercy of midnight begins at a moment that's not so easily defined. And so therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu did not want to create a situation where the mercy of God would not have been precise and it would have caused great damage. And so our second answer to our question as to what the importance and significance of Moshe Rabbeinu's decision, he said at the halfway point, sure, God can have a halfway point, but God's watch is set to what? Midnight. The Egyptian astronomer, the Egyptian magician, sets his watch to local time. And so Moshe Rabbeinu says, I'm not changing the prophecy. I'm just updating it to the local language, so that it can be understood. That's brilliant. That's thoroughly brilliant. Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi offers a third possibility. He suggests that when Moshe Rabbeinu uses the word kachatzos, what does the word kachatzos mean? So he says, we've always assumed that kachatzos means similar. We've assumed that it's, you know, at a certain period in time, right? It's a comparison. Approximately midnight. Kachatzos at approximately midnight on Yotzei B'Soch Mitzrayim. And we get frustrated by that translation because it speaks about imprecision. But it's possible that we have it all backwards, because sometimes it doesn't mean imprecise, but rather the chaf, kachatzos, could mean in comparison to Chatzos, or similar to Chatzos. What does that mean? Chatzos carries a certain status to it. It's a time of mercy. It's a time of strength. Like we said, Avram Avinu was told by one of the angels who came to visit. He was told, Shov v'shuv eilecha k'eis chaya v'hinei bein l'sara ishtecha. I'm going to return to you at approximately this moment in time, and Sarah Imenu is going to have a child. What do we mean to say? Not that it's going to be an imprecise time, an approximate time. We know that that was an exactly perfect time, 1 year later. But what happened? What happened was something incredible. What happened was, in the same excitement that you have now on the news, and you're laughing, you will laugh again in the same way, says Rav Eliyahu Mizrahi. There's going to be a similarity that will take place. And if you look at the psukim, you'll see that indeed, when Yitzchak was born, Sarah Imenu said, right, Tzchok asali Elokim, God made a exciting laughter, Kol HaShomea, anyone who hears, Yitzchakli, he will laugh, or she will laugh, together with me. The laughter that you are experiencing now will be similar to the laughter there. Well, Moshe Rabbeinu was saying the same thing. God's coming at midnight. But you just know that there will be a similarity to other midnights at this moment in time. And what does that mean? It means that there'll be certain times, says Rav Eliyahu Mizrahi, possibility number three, there'll be certain times in history where Chatzos HaLaila will carry with it a significance. There'll be great miracles that will happen at midnight. There will be times to see God's great mercy. We can read a whole bunch of them because they're all part of that same piece of poetry that we say at the Seder. Or for those of you who have recited the poetry of Yotros on Shabbos HaGadol, it's there as well, right? And we talk about those things that happen at midnight. And just like those things showed us God's great mercy and the fact that this is a moment of favor, so too here, that these things show us God's great favor. So tonight so far, and we'll close over here because the hour's late, but we've asked a question. We started off by asking, what exactly is Chatzos? And why is it any degree of similarity? And why is there any sort of ability to discriminate it? And why is it significant? And we offered three possibilities. We started off with the possibility of the Satmar Rebbe. And the Satmar Rebbe came to us and he said to us, the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu was so involved in Chatzos is he knew when midnight was, but he couldn't prove it. He said, because the north wind didn't blow. And we turned around and we questioned that. We said, with all deference to the Satmar Rebbe, while the north wind did not blow during all the time that the Jews were in the desert, it sounds like it blew very clear and loud when the Jews were in the land of Egypt. So then we went with the Chasam Sofer, who says it depends on where you are, right? God likes the world to run through Jerusalem. Egyptians think the world runs around them. And so what Moshe Rabbeinu tried to do was help the Egyptians see things the way we see things. And it doesn't change the nature of Chatzos. Chatzos is significant. It's a halfway point. It's the point where things are at dark before the dawn. But it helps to see that in advance. And that's what depends on whose clock you're looking at. And then we followed with the position of Rav Eliyahu Mizrahi. Rav Eliyahu Mizrahi says that the word kachatzos has nothing to do with being imprecise. He says we use it as a basis of comparison. In Jewish history, in Jewish destiny, Chatzos HaLaila has taught us a power. What is the power? Just when you think it's darker than dark, because that's what Chatzos is. It's the moment in time where things have been going darker and darker and darker and darker and darker, and you hit the deepest depth of night, then all of a sudden, things start to shape up again, and a new day comes, a new light is upon us. And that is the secret of Chatzos HaLaila. And that's why Chatzos HaLaila becomes the moment of opportunity. In fact, Rabbi Yohanan and Abishitz goes one step further. He says that's why David HaMelech used a harp of all things to signify midnight. You ever play a harp? Oh, wait, I have an expert here in music. Lee, tell me, one of the secrets of playing a harp is that the harder you stroke certain strings, the deeper the sound. The thicker the string, the deeper the sound, correct? I am getting approval from an expert. You want to hear a nice thought? I can't hear you, but you want to hear a nice thought, Lee, from a rabbinic side? This is not me. I can't take credit. This goes back to the late 1700s. Rabbi Honus and Abishitz turns around and he says, the secret of the pressure on the string of the harp that plays at midnight is a reminder to us as well. Sometimes we have the pressure and the sound becomes deep to us. But it's important for us to realize Chatzos is a reminder of the fact that at times we are under the deepest pressure. Those are the greatest opportunities for the sound that comes from the depth and plays nice and loud. And he said, you like that one, huh? Borrow it. It's not me, it's Rabbi Abishitz. And you should just know the Chasam Sofer's student, the Maram Shik, says that's true for exactly why King David got up at midnight with the harp. Why? When a person is feeling weak, where does the person want to go? Right back into bed, under the covers. Let the world go by me. I'm going back to bed. But the person who hears and remembers the lesson of the pressure of the harp, he hears the sound, she says to herself, I'm not giving up. The person who's able to go ahead and rise to that occasion, he gets out of bed. She rises from the bed, and they use the opportunity to turn it into a rallying point. It's not me. It's from Jonas and Abishitz and the Maram Shik taking the music of the harp and King David's reaction to it, raising themselves up. And it's especially true for us in our darkest moments, especially when we seem to want to go back under the covers. When it gets as dark as it gets, just listen for the deep sound. Rise from that midway point and use it as a rallying point. Just like somebody once pointed out to me, the way the 1-9 runs around Elizabeth as a parabola. Turn it upside down and you will see. Chatzos HaLaila is the start of things looking up. And from things that look up come great moments of opportunity. We'll grab those moments of opportunity and together we'll be able to grow. It all starts when things are in the darkest places. Getting ready to see. It's always darkest before the dawn. That, my dear friends, is Chatzos HaLaila. And I want to thank you all very much. I want to wish you all a wonderful Shabbos, a safe Shabbos, a Shabbos of good health, and Refuah Shleima to everybody. And with God's help, we will see each other again real soon. Everyone have a great Shabbos.